Today on Shipment from Shiloh, Jake and I discuss what players and stores can do to build the local Netrunner scene in Freedom Through Equality. Then, in The Jank Tank, Jake shows off his Red Planet Courier's Jemison deck. Finally, we play a round of Artist Colony. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm your host, Graham, and joining me today is my meta buddy, Jake.
Howdy.
Jake, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Happy 4th of July.
Same to you.
Happy America Day. This is a day where all Americans celebrate how American we are by, I don't know, doing American
drinking
stuff?
Drinking beer, eating brats, fireworks.
Beer, brats, and fireworks.
America.
Those are the three tenets of America.
And Netrunner.
And Netrunner as well, as we'll get into. We're going to be discussing building a local meta scene as players, as well as discussing one of Jake's more recent creations. But before we get too far into it, let's find out who the heck this Jake guy is in a segment we call Searchlight. All right, welcome to Searchlight, where we're going to learn a little bit more about Jake. So, Jake, I know I had you talk about this a little bit when we discussed Terminal Directive, but I want to know more about kind of your gaming history and then how you got into Netrunner.
So I'm relatively new to the Netrunner world, but before then, I played quite a bit of Magic the Gathering.
Sure.
Was really big into it a while ago, back when I was in middle school, took a long break. And then about a year and a half ago or so, I decided to get back into the game. Jumped back in, started going to local gaming stores, playing drafts, some standard tournaments. Mm-hmm. Found the card pool to be a little bit too large. I didn't have the time that I would have liked to put into the game. And I felt like a lot of the friends that I had made playing that were a little bit more dedicated and just had, you know, the resources to go out, buy the expensive $500 decks and stay on top of everything. Yeah. So I felt like I was kind of falling behind the curve.
Yeah.
But I really liked the game. I liked the mechanics, the technical nature of it. So I was looking for something that could maybe try and replace that. And I had come across Netrunner a while back. I knew it was a living card game, but I didn't really know what that was at the time.
Sure.
So as I was kind of falling out of the Magic scene, I started to look into Netrunner more and more.
Hmm.
And I ended up getting the core set as a Christmas gift this past year, 2016.
Cool.
And from there, I realized that it had sort of the same technical nature as what Magic did.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the asymmetrical part of the game, where when you play as the Corp, it's a little bit of a different game than when you're the runner. And so from there, I started to read about it online. And I discovered that, you know, there was this community. It wasn't just a game that you buy from a store and then play at home like some board games are. There was this living community that, you know, had a meta with all the cards that were coming out and changing the way the game was played and impacting strategies. And so it had those aspects of Magic that I really liked, but it also was not overwhelming in the same way that Magic can sometimes be.
Yeah.
So a lot less cards coming out, less frequency, but still enough to keep the game interesting. And that was something that I thought was really appealing.
Yeah, yeah. So now that you are a Netrunner veteran, because you've been playing for all of 6 or 7 months
right,
now.
Right, yeah, a lifetime.
What do you think makes Netrunner special in terms of a card game? You kind of talked about how it was similar to Magic. So what do you like that is different from Magic or other card games that sets it apart?
The big thing that I mentioned earlier is the asymmetrical nature.
Yeah.
So you have to know both sides because you have to play both sides in a matchup. You can't just focus on one strategy only.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be able to adapt. And I think the other thing that I really like, and I'm not sure if this is unique to Netrunner. I'm sure there's other games that have a similar sort of piece of it. But it's the idea of having credits that you have to manage. And those resources that can go away as you use them. They're not permanently there. So Magic, everyone knows I have the lands that you play.
Right.
And once the land's down, it pretty much lasts the whole game unless it gets removed somehow.
Yeah, it's strictly a snowballing economy.
Exactly.
Right. As opposed to these resources that can ebb and flow.
Exactly. So there you have to manage it in Magic, but in Netrunner, once you use a credit, it's gone. So you have to balance what to use when. How much do you have to save for your future terms? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I'm always thinking way further ahead than what I was in Magic.
Yeah.
I wasn't a very good Magic player, so that may have been one of my problems, is I never thought far enough ahead. But I like the idea of having consumable resources that you constantly have to manage and replenish to make sure that you're going to have the ability to pursue the avenues that you want to within a game.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of the strategies and decks that you like to play in Netrunner? Like, I'm sure you haven't explored every single deck that's out there.
I actually have played every single deck there is.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I just took one weekend, just built them all.
Right.
No, but seriously, the decks I like to play are, I would say, a little bit more of the quirky ones.
Sure.
They don't always do as well, but I find them really fun when you have just kind of cheesy combos that you can put together where you have these cards that by themselves, they're pretty terrible, but then you add another card that's also terrible, and then together they're just slightly less as bad as what they are individually. But I like those decks that try to take things that by themselves really are almost worthless and create this sort of system that you can build throughout the game that can let you do some cool things. It may not always be the most competitive, but it keeps the games really interesting. And
really interesting.
And when they do work, it can catch people by surprise. Your opponent will be like, wow, I can't believe you actually pulled it off.
Yeah, yeah. So an example of that is earlier this afternoon when we were playing some games, we had this very interesting matchup that was you playing Alice Merchant,
right?
Which whenever you make a successful run on Archives, the Corp has to trash a card from their hand. So definitely disruptive, and you're combining it with these other disruptive cards like Bagat, which makes them trash stuff off the top of their deck, and Hemorrhage, which makes them trash cards from their hand. And it creates a lot of Archives pressure. And I was playing Tenon Institute, where you get to put advancement counters on cards on the table if the runner didn't make a successful run. So you usually combine that with Advanceable Ice. And to go along with that, I had three copies of Space Camp in my deck, which is a card when you access it, even from Archives, you get to put advancement counters on your ice.
Mm-hmm.
I also ran Shocks, which deal net damage even if you access
them.
Even in Archives. So I ended up having this really weird, like, we had this really weird interplay that was all about managing the cards that were in Archives, and you had Archives interface to try to remove the Space Camp from the game so that my ice walls didn't get so expensive. When has anyone had this weird matchup before? But
yeah, it wasn't about agenda points or flatlining. It was just Archives management, and that was it. There was one run where I had made you trash like maybe five cards or so since I last ran Archives, and they were all face down, so I couldn't see what they were. And I finally run into it thinking I'm going to hit some agendas, like there has to be at least one in there.
Right.
And I knew there was one Space Camp and one Shock already face up. The face down cards included two more Space Camps and two more Shocks. So I took three net damage, and you were able to get three advancement tokens onto your cards. And I was like, well, that completely backfired right there.
Right, so. Right. Now, I don't know if Hemorrhage, Alice Merchant, or Space Camp Tenon is going to be winning any regionals anytime soon. But man, those were super fun games. We played two of those. Yep. And just totally quirky, unique decks that had this really interesting interplay. And I love that. I love exploring the greater card pool of Netrunner and just doing things that you never thought that you would see if you were just focused on playing competitive decks. So
yeah, even that crick, that ice you had in front of Archives that lets you install a card. You got to install a Brain Trust and then score it out in the next turn in an open remote.
Right, right. So. And that was a Brain Trust that you had bugatted from me off the top of my deck right at the beginning of the game. And I snuck it out with a crazy crick play.
It's funny how certain cards that really just don't do much on their own in certain situations can completely change the game in your favor.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so today in Freedom Through Equality, we are going to discuss the two-man meta. And the intent here is that there are other metas around the globe where you maybe don't have a ton of players coming in every week. Maybe you are only meeting up every other week, or maybe you've only got 2, 3, 4 people that show up. So to start us off, Jake, what's our local meta been like in 2017?
In the early months, it was literally just you and me for the casual events.
Right, just like a Tuesday night meetup.
Right, so our local game store had a monthly game night kit tournament that they mm-hmm. would do, and we'd have a few more people show up, maybe 4 or 5 yeah. at the most.
Yeah.
And then you and I would come on the other Tuesdays, so the yep. 3 weeks besides that tournament one, and it would just be you and me playing fun games, trying out different things.
Yeah.
And it was always fun, but what we found lately is that our consistent showing up and having these matches has sort of expanded it. So in the past few weeks, we've had more and more people joining our group. So we've someone, Matt, who was on an earlier episode of your podcast.
Yeah.
He's come back to the game. So mm-hmm. he started coming on Tuesdays. We've had a new person start showing up who's just getting into the game for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've even had some of the people who were showing up for those monthly tournaments start to come on the occasional casual night as well.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting to see, you know, as more people join, we had always tried to mix up what decks we were using and keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. But now you have a whole nother group of people that are also mixing up their decks. So I feel like
right.
every Tuesday night, you're going to see something new or a deck that you may know about it, but you're not necessarily playing against someone who uses it regularly.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool that as the group grows, the variety of our games also changes.
We started off with just the two of us. Past couple months we've seen more players. So first I want to address, what has the store done to help grow the player base in your mind?
So Dave, who works at Fair Game in Downers Grove,
right,
loves Netrunner. And
loves
so
it.
Anytime there's anyone that comes in that seems even remotely interested,
right,
you know, he's right there telling them about the game, explaining how it works, and also letting them know that, hey, if you're interested, you can come in on a Tuesday. Everyone has some extra decks that you can start mm-hmm. to learn with, so you don't have to go out and buy all the cards right away if you want to learn how to play. And so I think just letting people know that this is going on, that, you know, there's a small group that meets consistently,
right,
has been really good to get the word out there and get people interested. And the use of their Facebook page as well to promote the tournaments that they have once a month, I think that's how most people find out, like, if they're interested, hey, let's head over to Downers Grove on Tuesdays and see what's
right.
going on.
Right. So there's a couple different Facebook groups that are going on. Our local store just has a Netrunner group. So they have, you know, it's Fair Game of Downers Grove. So they have the Fair Game Facebook page, and then they have the Fair Game Netrunner Facebook page. You know, granted, it might be a little bit much, but at the same time, when you're trying to build a following, I kind of like having our own little Netrunner group for just our store. You know, there's also the Chicagoland Netrunner group, and that's great, but you know, so they'll post events on there that are in places that would literally take us an hour
right.
to get to.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know if I want to spend 2 hours commuting regularly to go to just a casual Netrunner thing.
Maybe play like 3 games and then
right on back.
Oh,
gotta hit the road, guys. So I like having the local store page.
Yep, and I think we are in a unique situation where we do live close to Chicago, where there are a lot of Netrunner players and a lot
yeah.
of different groups nearby. But like you said, some of them can be quite a drive, and during the week at night, you don't necessarily want to spend that time to do that. So we're trying to get, you know, a consistent group going very close to where we live.
Right.
So you can get to the store in 5-10 minutes. And I think, but posting in both Facebook pages not only lets the people nearby know, but also expands it to the larger Chicagoland group. So mm-hmm. who knows? Mm-hmm. A year from now, there could be 15-20 people that come every Tuesday for casual groups as more and more people start to learn about it.
Right, right. Definitely. So one thing I do want to commend the store on, specifically manager Dave, is that he's been really good about regularly firing off a Netrunner event and making sure that he's getting game night kits. And, you know, he'll usually get a game night kit every season and then use those cards for 2 different tournaments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if he's firing off 1 event a month, he'll spend like $20 or whatever the store has to on the game night kit itself, and then have two tournaments from those prizes. So he covers himself for 2 months, right, and then there'll be like an off month, and then he'll buy another one, and the cycle continues. But he's been really regular about it, and I think that's really important because those are the nights where we see a spike in attendance.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And
yeah, people like the promos. Even right, if you split it out over two different events, there's still enough in those kits that right, you're still going to get some promos, even if you don't finish in the top three or so.
Right. You know, usually, Dave is pretty generous, so he'll usually give out three promo cards to every person.
Yep.
He'll also give out stuff from his own collection, which I don't think that everyone has to do, but like, you know, he was in the game for a while and held on to a lot of his altered cards from years ago, and so now he'll give them out as prizes. And so like, I got two alt art ice walls that are last GNK, and I did not play when the ice walls were given out, so it was kind of nice to still be able to collect these alt art cards that technically could be kind of hard to find.
Yeah, and I think just having the store, you know, stand behind the players, providing a space to play, providing those events, making right, sure there is prize support, even if it's not much, you know, people, like I said, people like those promos.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're always happy to get that in addition to just having a place to play and having fun.
Right.
So I think having that store be supportive of the community really helps put down that baseline that you can expand upon.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what are some things that we as players have done to help grow the player base at our store?
I think the first thing is that, you know, we tend to be very open because just the two of us right now, that yeah, when someone shows up, it's actually an exciting thing. We're like, oh, wow, there's a new person who wants to play.
So, right, right.
I think that's the big thing is some communities, and I saw this in Magic a little bit at some stores, they can be a little closed off where it's like, oh, who's the new guy coming in here?
Right, right, right. And thinking they own the place.
Right, yeah. This is our turf. This store ain't big enough for both of us. I mean, if you act like that when someone walks in, they're never going to come back, especially absolutely, if they're a new player. The new player absolutely, may actually just leave and be like, I'm not going to mess yeah, with these people, these yeah, maniacs. So it's always good to, you know, just be nice and friendly. And with new players, make sure that, you know, if they need to borrow cards, let them borrow cards. If you have an extra deck, yeah, let them use that. And you're really good whenever someone comes up during a game, you're yeah, really good at kind of explaining what it is, because you can tell they're curious and they don't know what it is, but they don't necessarily want to interrupt us if we're playing. So right, you always make sure it's like, oh, hey, you know, this is Netrunner, you know, this is how it's played a little bit. Yeah. So that they have that comfort to say like, oh, okay, so that's what the game is. Maybe I should look into it in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
You plant the seed.
I plant the seed and let it grow. I feel like there's like an Ubax joke or something in there, right? One of the cards that has plant life on it. That's something that I am personally just kind of sensitive to, is making sure that people feel included. And that goes for all walks of life. But when it comes to Netrunner, it reflects itself in things like that, where someone walks up to the table and clearly they are just there to meet up with some of their friends for a board game or something, and they're just walking around while their friends show up, and they'll kind of look at it, and I'll usually just look them in the eye and say, hey, what's up?
And stare them down.
I stare them down.
Get over here.
Listen, son, if you're going to be breathing down my neck. No, that's too intense. But yeah, I'll usually just give them the bare bones, right? Because they don't want to know a ton of information. They're just a little bit curious. So I'll say, oh yeah, this is Netrunner. It's a cool game because it's asymmetric, so each person is playing kind of a different side. And it's in the game, your goal is to get to 7 points. But only one of these two different sides has point cards. So they're going to lay out defenses, and then the person who doesn't have point cards has to interact with the cards that are on the table to try to steal those points away from them. And
it's basically an elevator pitch.
You yeah,
give them just enough information so that they'll be curious to go look into it more on their own and see if it's something they would like.
Right, right. It's really easy to start blowing up and say, oh, it's this really cool game where you're managing your money and you have actions on your turn, and you use those actions to play these different cards. And like, I think even at that point, someone's already kind of lost interest.
They're like, I wish I never walked over here.
If anything, just because it's a little bit dry, right? Like, you're kind of explaining the mechanics, and as mechanics go, they're great. But it might be a little bit too much for someone who's just kind of being exposed to it. So,
I think another thing that we did, and this is probably just because we like the game so much, is we were just consistently met every week.
Yes.
So there wasn't that situation where someone's like, oh, you know, there's a Netrunner group that gets together. Oh, I'll come next Tuesday. Right. And then we just weren't there.
Right.
So I know, it's, you know, people have busy schedules. It's hard to consistently meet. But if you can do it, and even if it's just you and one other person.
Right.
Go to the game store. Don't stay home and do it, because no one's going to know about it then. No one's going to see the game.
Right.
So if you have a place to play, go play there. And it'll build excitement and get people aware that this is going on, and they might want to join in down the road.
Right, right, definitely. We talked a little bit about being welcoming to new players. So something that I think we've done well is be really positive with the people that we've interacted with. Mm-hmm. And if there's a new player who shows up, be really positive with them. Mm-hmm. And then that also relates into like a good sportsmanship kind of thing.
More, not to change the subject, but more than just positivity and good sportsmanship, I think there needs to be that aspect of reducing the competitive nature a little bit.
Yes.
For new players. Now, we're not
Yes.
super competitive with each other. We've played
No.
I don't dozens of games against each other. So you win some, you lose some, whatever.
Right.
You don't necessarily want to have that same level of competitiveness or just playing as fast as what you normally do against a new player.
Right.
You've got to make sure you take the time to explain what's going on and
Right.
what you're doing, especially if they're not familiar with all of the cards.
Right.
Because that's one of the easiest ways to get someone to, they'll buy a core set and then they'll never play again, never buy anything else, if their first experience is someone just throwing down cards
Right.
and taking credits as fast as they can and then saying, okay, your turn.
Right.
And then be like, oh, okay, I won 7-0. You should have done this, 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 and then you maybe would have had a chance. Like,
Right.
if you say that to a new player, they're going to be like, screw this, I'm out of here.
Yeah, no one likes getting stomped in that way.
Yep.
Like, it's fine if you lose, but if you don't feel like you have any control in the game, or you're, or if there's so much that's going on that's over your head,
mm-hmm.
then it's not fun.
It gives a sense that the people you're playing against that are more experienced don't want to be bothered with you.
Right.
They don't want to take the Right. time to actually teach you things and to introduce you.
Right.
They're just going to beat you, and then they're going to brag about it and tell you all the things you did wrong without telling you how to actually improve.
Right, right. So for a casual meetup, particularly if I'm playing with someone that I don't necessarily know that well, just to use an example, let's say turn one, I'm playing as a Shaper. And let's say I'm playing as Haley, who lets you install two cards for one click. If I were in a very competitive environment, I might throw down two cards from my hand that are called Test Run and Scavenge. And I would just say, all right, Test Run, Scavenge, Magnum Opus, I'm going to install SMC, take four, go. And that sounds like I'm talking a different language, right? So breaking it down and saying, I'm using Test Run, I'm going to search my deck for Magnum Opus, put it on the table. I'm going to use Scavenge to trash the Magnum Opus to install the Magnum Opus, and just breaking it down for a second. You don't need to like necessarily explain a lot of things, but if you say, oh, well, Test Run says you got to put the program back on top of your deck, Scavenge gets around that, so it gets to stay now. Oh, okay. You know,
right, and when you're new, you don't necessarily care about all these specific details.
Right.
Just the general idea.
Just breaking it down and doing one thing at a time.
But experienced players, that's all going on in their head. They get it. They know. And it can be tricky sometimes to take that step back and say,
yes.
How is the other player perceiving me?
Yes.
And I think that's really important.
That's the crux of it, isn't it? Is just thinking, how is the other person perceiving the situation? And how can I facilitate anything if they don't necessarily know it,
mm-hmm.
right? I brought up a good sportsmanship thing, too. I'm going to throw this out there. It's casual Netrunner night, right?
Yep.
Hashtag takesies backsies. There's no problem in saying, oh, you know what? I should have rezzed this pad campaign at the start of my turn. Oh, you know what? I know I just trashed this card at the end of my turn because I had too many cards in my hand. Let me switch out which one I did.
Yep.
We do that all the time.
Or if someone made a doofus move and put a bioethics behind a piece of ice, by accident.
Right, right.
That person should be given the option to change it, which I was. I did that earlier
today. Happened like 2 hours ago.
I rezzed it, and Graham was like, ooh, that should not be behind ice. But he gave me the option to, if I wanted to replay it and put it on a different server, because he hadn't run at any of my other remotes that I had installed last term.
Right.
But, you know, we've played enough that at this point, I felt like I should have caught that mistake, so I left it there.
Right.
But for someone that's new, or even just in a friendly game, it's always nice to give the person an option to kind of fix something, especially if it hasn't impacted the outcome of the events since that first took place.
Right, right. And that's exactly the right attitude you got to have for, I'm going to say, any casual event.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're playing with players that have played for a while, like, I don't see a problem with it. If they want to be really competitive, that's totally fine, but there's a time and a place for that as well. And you don't have to, just because you're a competitor doesn't mean that you have to expect the other person to be at that level.
Right. And I think one of the worst feelings when you're trying to make sense of all of these rules and all of these different card abilities is playing a card, having the person across the table be like, well, actually, that doesn't do what you think it's going to do.
Yeah.
And then that person saying, well, too bad, you played it already. So
you
spent the credits and it goes into your heap, and
right,
that's it.
Right.
And you're like, well, okay. Bum, bum.
Cool. You know, there's something to be said for learning from your mistakes, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you don't have to be very cutthroat about it.
Right.
And I think that's more welcoming to a wider variety of people. If the end result is we want to grow this community, you know, I think that's the attitude you got to take. Great point.
Just being friendly to people and nice in general, I think, goes a really long way.
Yeah, yeah. So the last thing I think that we as players do to help grow the player base is hyping up events and meetups. You know, like even online, even on those Facebook groups, you know, we'll be like, oh, you guys coming next Tuesday? Gonna fire off a kit or something like that.
Or just even marking that you're attending on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because if someone's looking at the event and they're like, oh, there's only one person who's going.
Right.
They might put maybe instead and then not show up. If they see there's 4, 5, 6, then be like, oh, okay, that looks good.
Especially if that person has to drive. Like if there's a bit of a commute, the shop is 30, 40 minutes away, if they're not sure if they're going to come or not. Anything else for us as players?
Well, I think we're just great people overall, and people see us playing and they're like, I want to be part of that.
That's something
to look up to.
Yeah, there's something about them.
Yep.
They ooze charisma. That's what it is.
I want to
be their friend.
All those great action pictures that Dave takes and posts on Facebook of us in the heat of battle of Netrunner.
So that's something that Dave does as a store side, manager side. He's managing the Facebook page every week. Every single week, he'll come over and be like, oh, Netrunner players, let me take this picture for the Facebook page.
And yeah, I think you made the joke a while ago that people were going to think we were like paid models to come in and pretend, because it was just us every week, just a picture of the two of us sitting, pretending like we're playing Netrunner at the table.
Just act like you're holding cards.
Right.
or what was it last time? It was like, all right, do model poses. And you're like, okay. So you held up your hand and you're like flexing your arm. That was awesome. So a little brainstorm for a second. How else could we be growing our local community? What else do you think we could do?
I think one thing is, so there's a lot of board game groups, I think, nearby us that meet up. And I don't want to use the word infiltrate, but I typically haven't gone to those. But I'm thinking maybe if we kind of branched out on another night to just meet more people that are interested in games.
Yeah.
And then maybe try to convert them over to Netrunner. Not break apart their group, but if they're meeting on Wednesdays and they're looking for something to do on Tuesdays and they like card games, hey, here's this Netrunner thing. It's, you know, very deep, complex. It's very rewarding once you learn it.
Probably the greatest game ever created by anyone. It'll blow your mind about how great it is. So you should probably do it.
So I think that maybe more is just kind of reaching out to actively looking for people that like games but aren't necessarily aware of Netrunner.
Right, right. Something that I am excited about, and Dave is also excited about doing, is hosting a Teaching Netrunner event. So this is geared towards strictly picking up new players, but maybe if we had befriended some of these other gamers, like, hey, we're teaching Netrunner next week, you should totally come.
Right.
And I'm interested in learning more about that. I think ideally we would be giving out some kind of prize support.
Mm-hmm.
Even at that level, you could probably be giving out like store coupons or discounts, or maybe like old data packs or some kind of prize, right? Like,
yep.
You want to feel like you are getting something for being at that event, aside from just obliging someone else and agreeing to go with them.
Yeah, it's right? Like, okay, I came here, you read me the rule book, can I go now? Like,
right.
You want
right.
them to want to be there.
Right, exactly. So that's something that I would be really interested in.
The best way to get people playing this game is to get them to play it. And I know that's kind of a catch-22.
Right.
But I feel like after the first several rounds, they're going to want to continue to play more and more.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's that first initial foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Hey, sit down. These are the basic rules. Let's play core set only.
Yeah.
If you can get that, I think you're going to get people really excited.
Right, right. I also have in my notes here, what's something we could do? Make a blood pact to each bring in one new player to our meta. Now, blood pact, I don't know.
I've got the knife right here.
Oh, you ready? All right, let's do this. But no, I think, like, if everyone in the world right now who played Netrunner agreed to try to bring one other person to one Netrunner event in 2017, like, if everyone in the world agreed to do that, and what if a third of those people stuck around? We would still grow our community
yeah.
by 30%, you know? Like, I think that's pretty significant. So, you know, just kind of focusing on what could I do to get one person? Oh, you know, Brian, I think this is his kind of game, so I'm going to try to teach him. And if I can teach him how to play, and I can get him to come out and just hang out with me, right? Well, yeah, Brian, we could just be playing by ourselves, but go to the store, meet other, you know, two or three other people. Like, it doesn't have to be anything big, but I think making that commitment to bring in a new person would go a really long way.
Just to clarify, you mean voluntarily getting that person to go, not kidnapping. You're
not,
no crimes for Netrunner.
Well, okay. I mean,
no felonies, yeah, at least.
Okay. Well, no felonies. We'll go that far.
I think that's a really good point, though. Is just getting people to show up. And for me personally, every time I go to a new place or I'm trying to join a new group, there's kind of that awkwardness, especially if everyone knows each other and you're the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have someone who's already there that's part of the in crowd and you're friends with them, then that makes it a much easier transition. So I think that hesitancy to show up at these events would go away if you have that connection already. So I think that's a really good idea for people
yeah.
in these groups to just find a friend who they know is interested in the same sort of stuff,
yeah.
get them into the game, and then get them to show up.
Right, right. All right, gang, we're going to have some fun. Welcome to the Jank Tank. This is where I'm going to talk to my panelists about maybe a fun, exciting, different deck that's using some maybe not common strategies. You might describe them as alternative strategies. In a deck that they've been working on. And Jake is up for the challenge today.
I noticed out of all the adjectives you chose, you did not say good. So you did not describe the deck as good. So.
I did not describe the deck as good. I think, so here's my standard disclaimer, right? Jank, when you boil it down, just means unpopular, right? Like, that's all it means. I think that the Haley Caps Lock deck, where you have like Laguna Velasco District to draw a bunch of cards and break stuff with Faust, I think that's kind of janky. Like, it seems very weird, and there's lots of like weird card combos.
Almost
and
unintended. Like, the developers weren't necessarily going for that strategy.
Yeah, not necessarily, right? But I also understand why it can be effective. So jank doesn't necessarily mean bad, is my point.
Okay.
Jank just means offbeat, a little bit irregular.
Interesting.
Interesting. So you've brought a jank deck today, am I right?
Yes. So it is based off the ID, the Wayland ID for Jemison Astronautics.
Nice.
I've been kicking this around for a few months at this point, right after the ID came out.
Sure.
I know it got a little bit of attention when it first came out in
yep.
that data pack, and it had the Oberth asset in it as well.
Right.
Which those two go hand in hand.
Best friends.
I haven't really seen it get much play.
Since then, right.
Since then. But the build that I had was initially not really good. It all revolves around forfeiting agendas to try and score better agendas.
Sure. For listeners who don't remember off the top of their head, go ahead and read what Jemison Astronautics does.
Put on my announcer voice.
Whenever you forfeit an agenda, place one advancement token on a card and one additional token for each agenda point the agenda was worth.
Ooh, you should work for Audible. That was really good.
Thank you. I've been practicing.
Well, all aboard the jank train. Let's get into this. So you mentioned Oberth.
Right.
Which goes hand in hand with this because it's kind of like a San City grid that forces you to forfeit an agenda to res it.
Not nearly as effective, but yes, the idea is that you want to fast advance agendas with the Oberth. So what you do is to res that, you have to forfeit an agenda. That's part of the res cost for it. And I believe it's 2 credits in addition.
Yep.
But by forfeiting that agenda, the Jemison Astronautics ID ability fires, giving you more advancement tokens.
Right.
And then with Oberth, the first time you advance a card in or protecting that server each turn, you get to put an additional advancement counter on that card.
Gotcha.
So in certain situations, you could actually score a 3.5 advancement agenda from your hand. You would install it, res the Oberth by forfeiting another agenda, put on the advancement tokens, then advance it normally. So that was really cool to be able to do that. There aren't many instances when you could actually fast advance a 3-point agenda. The deck became really feasible, I feel like, when the card Sacrifice came out.
Okay.
Which is a zero-cost operation, and that allows you to also forfeit an agenda as a cost of playing for it, and then you can get rid of bad pub for every point that the agenda you forfeited was worth. And it gives you a credit for each bad pub you remove.
Yep.
What that did is it gave you the ability to forfeit agendas even if you already had an Oberth rest. If you basically, you need a reason to forfeit an agenda. You just can't do it whenever want. And that gave you extra opportunities. So that was the build that I had been playing for a while now. Mm-hmm. And it was actually okay.
Yeah.
It didn't win a lot of matches, but it wasn't as bad as what you might think a deck that relied on forfeiting their win conditions would be.
Yeah, right.
Like, when you give up an agenda, it sets you back. So what I've done now is with the latest 2 data packs that have come out, Earth Scions and Blood and Water, there were some really interesting operation cards that really made this deck, I think, go into the boundaries of just insanity here.
Yeah.
So one of them is Red Planet Couriers, and this is a triple, so you pay 5 credits, and it costs you 3 clicks in total, one for normal, and then 2 additional as part of the cost to play it. And it allows you to move all advancement tokens from all of the cards installed to one single card. Mm-hmm. There's also a card called Success, which is also a triple but costs 0 credits. And what it does is it allows you to forfeit an agenda, and then you can advance a card X number of times where X was equal to the advancement requirement of the original agenda that you forfeited. Now, that also doubles with the Jemison Astronautics ID ability.
Yeah.
So you're in a situation here where you could forfeit a very small agenda and then actually score a big one with just 3 clicks. So what I've done with those 2 cards is I sort of revamped the whole deck. I got rid of those Sacrifice operations for as good as what they were. I wanted to go in a completely absurd route. And so what I've done is I've replaced them with the Red Planet Couriers and Success operations, but then also some Anson Rose cards, which for anyone who's not familiar with, that allows you to res it. It's an asset. And at the beginning of your turn, every turn, you get an advancement counter on Anson Rose. And then whenever you subsequently res a piece of ice, you can move any number of those counters to that ice.
Right.
So all of my ice is advanceable. I have Anson Rose. Mm-hmm. And the point of this deck is to build up at least 9 advancement counters on all of your ice and any Anson Rose cards.
Yeah.
And then there's a combo that you try to pull off in one turn. So it requires you to have a few cards.
Yeah.
And you can use Project Atlas agendas, if you've scored them with the over advancement to get the counter,
right.
You can use them to search for some of the combo cards. But basically what it is, and I was actually able to pull this off twice last week.
I'm excited for this.
You play a Biotic Labor, which costs 4 credits and gives you
an extra click.
So you now have 4 clicks. You can then install a Government Takeover, which is the big bad 6-point agenda.
9 advancement costs.
9 advancement costs.
But 6 points.
6 points. So you install that with your first click, and because you played Biotic Labor, you have
3 clicks.
Three additional ones. So then what you do is you try to play the Red Planet Couriers, and then move all of those advancement counters from all of the other cards onto your Government Takeover, right. And then you can score it.
Boom. Fast advance, Government Takeover, the dream.
That's the goal. Doesn't always work out, especially if they hit Government Takeover off R&D on turn 2. It's pretty much game unless you have a punitive counter-strike.
Limit 1 per deck, man. That's tough. That's tough.
But yeah, it's a very fun deck. It's very quirky and weird. And as I mentioned earlier, it's when you actually pull it off, people just kind of stare at you from across the table. They're like, really? Really? That's what you're going to do? But there's a few different routes you can do. If you're just not hitting the pieces of the combo you want, you can try to use the Oberth and just regular forfeiting of agendas, like if you have an Archer or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can try to just use the Jemison ID to score out a few hostile takeovers, Project Atlas or Global Food Initiatives.
Yeah.
I typically just try to use those as the stepping stones to basically get the motor of the deck going so I can score the government takeover.
Instead of trying to ramp up from hostile takeover to Global Food Initiative, etc., you are just trying to build up a board state where there are 9 advancement counters anywhere, and you have a Biotic Labor Government Takeover in hand. Like, that's really your main objective.
The only time I try to score hostile takeover is if I need the credits or if I need to forfeit it for another card.
Right.
And then Atlas is good because it allows you to search if you over-advance it.
Right.
Outside of that, I typically don't try to score any of the agendas unless I know that it's really safe to try and do so in a remote. One of the cards I did put in that I think is a little bit interesting compared to other builds is that I put in Old Hollywood Grid, which is an NBN card, and it basically says that any agendas accessed from this server, it's a region, cannot be stolen unless the runner already has a copy of that agenda in his or her score area, and it's effective even on the run where they trash that card.
Right, right. So it can force them to either run into a server, trash that, and then run again if they want to steal that agenda.
Right.
Or if it's off a random access, like if there's a government takeover in your hand, then there's only one government takeover, so they're never going to be able to steal it until after they've trashed it.
Right. And the hope is, you know, it's not always going to be effective, but the hope is if you throw it on R&D and they hit government takeover early,
right,
they can't necessarily steal it, and they might not have the money to trash the Old Hollywood Grid and rerun.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the goal is that if you use Project Atlas to go find the government takeover, mm-hmm. once you have the other combo pieces set up, they're going to know what's in your hand.
Right.
So if you install the Old Hollywood Grid,
right,
and you have enough ice that has been really advanced far enough that it's very taxing to get through, you're hoping that they can't get through enough times to actually steal and win the game, essentially.
Right. Now, are you finding that you can actually get a fair amount of advancements on this ice?
So Anson Rose is the secret to that.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, people will just let him sit, even if he's just behind an ice wall or something. Now, when we played, you were smart enough to go in and trash him when he still had quite a few counters on him.
Right.
But in most of my games, he would just sit out there the entire time, and then as you res ice, you slowly move those counters over.
Right.
So like Hordum, Mausolus, Colossus is really good.
Colossus is so good.
With the advancement counters on them. So as you move them over, you slowly build up to 9. It's actually not that difficult. And one of my favorite things was a game I was playing. Someone was trying to pull off an apocalypse because I had gotten all the pieces I need. They knew I had government takeover in my hand. And I think I had one piece of ice in front of HQ.
Yeah.
And that was it. And they were trying to apocalypse everything, and then they would just go in and take the government takeover.
Right.
So they ran HQ. I rezzed an ice wall for 1 credit. I took 9 credits off Anson Rose, and it was like a strength 10 barrier that they didn't have enough money to break. so they couldn't get through. They couldn't run all of the centrals and play Apocalypse.
Oh, man.
And so it saved me the game. And no one really ever expects to hit a 10-strength ice wall.
Right.
Like, you just,
right.
It doesn't compute. So you don't even think that's a possibility.
Well, so what's so interesting to me about Anson Rose in this context is not only are you using it to kind of just generally buff your ice, like being able to not spend clicks on advancing your ice like a Mausolus or a Whoredom, like that's good. So people are like, okay, I can see why they maybe have it in there, but I don't really know how that's going to translate to you winning. But if you get 9 tokens out there, then you use Red Planet Couriers as part of this combo, and Anson Rose becomes your win condition.
Right.
Are you running 3 Anson?
3.
Yeah. Yep. You want to see him early, you want to get a lot of tokens.
But I have found if you res a piece of ice, even if it's not advanceable, I think the Archer is the only non-advanceable ice that I have, I will still move tokens from Anson Rose over to that ice unless I know that I'll be able to res another piece that would actually use the tokens, because you don't want to let it just build up on a single card that could be trashed.
Yeah.
Because that throws out your whole strategy.
Right. Well, if you've got tokens on the Archer, then you can Red Planet Couriers them from that
Archer. It's still effective. It's still effective on the Archer, even though it doesn't change the way the ice works.
Right.
So as long as those tokens are on any card that's installed, they would move over to the Government Takeover.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you can do is, if for whatever reason, if you're not drawing the Anson Rose, or if your opponent has trashed it and you have an Oberth, you can still use that to advance the ice, because the ice gets that second advancement token the first time.
Oh, sure.
So if you're trying to build up your advancement tokens and you don't want to just use a click and a credit for each one, you can use Oberth to advance once and get 2 counters on it.
No, that's cool. That is really nice. So what I like about that is you're finding synergies that you don't necessarily think of, right? Like Jemison, you think sacrificing agendas.
Yep.
And then if you're playing like a Titan deck, maybe, I've seen Titan use Trick of Light to fast advance stuff. And Trick of Light, you pull advancement counters from other cards. So now you're thinking advanceable ice here. Mm-hmm. So you're not using Trick of Light, but you're using Anson Rose in what you think is just a sacrifice agenda deck. But the synergy kind of lies around Oberth, and it lies around being able to score out Government Takeover in 2 different ways.
Right.
By either playing success with a scored Global Food, or doing Bionic Red Planet Couriers.
Yep.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I didn't choose Trick of Light in here, because I felt like it diminished the strength of my ice. So when you have a 6-point agenda in R&D or in your hand, you want to be locked down. So right. I'm happy to leave those advancement counters there as long as possible. Whereas I feel like Trick of Light, you're trying to score more frequently with smaller agendas.
Right. So why do you like playing this deck, Jake?
Because it's nonsense. It really is nonsense. You know, I know there's a few cards and some on the runner side as well that have abilities when you forfeit agendas. But there's not that many agendas in a normal deck. And if you start to forfeit them, you're eventually going to run out and you can't score to win, or you'll just end up having to score 5 or 6 of them before you get to the 7 points.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting that you can actually put that to your advantage and help you do some crazy things. Right now, then this will probably change in the future as more people start to play this newer ID. A lot of players just don't expect what this deck is going to do. They don't know how to approach it. They don't know the imminent danger that's sitting there when you have all of these ice with counters on them,
right?
And you're in HQ, you have all the pieces for the combo.
That's always Jank's number one strength, right? Is that your opponent doesn't know what kind of garbage you're playing.
The element of surprise. They'll look at the board state and say, okay, this person's in terrible shape. They're never, they don't have a chance.
The only thing they have is an Anson Rose with 10 counters.
Right.
Like, what is that going to do? What are you going to over advance your Whoredom? I don't even use AIs, blah, blah, blah. Oh no, 11 strength ice wall. Right. Oh no, Red Planet Couriers.
The best is when you have the Biotic Labor, Red Planet Couriers, and then you top deck the Government Takeover. And you're like, oh, that's game.
I have the power. cool. So I've got a copy of this deck, well, a version of this deck list in the show notes below. So if you are listening and this intrigued you, try this deck out and then let us know how it went. I always say my contact information at the end of the podcast, but you can find me on Slack or Reddit, or you can post a comment here on the website, or shoot me a tweet. And I'm curious to hear what you think about this Jake Jemison deck. Okay, Jake, I have a game for you.
Oh, boy.
Are you excited?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this is a game I'm borrowing from our friends across the pond. The guys at Neo Redding Grid have a very good podcast called Dead Channel. And if you haven't checked it out, I absolutely would. They're great. Their content is really good, particularly for a competitive mindset. Really enjoy their stuff. And one of the games that they like to play is a game called Artist Colony. In this game, we are trying to get the other person to guess what a card is only by describing the art. So the only rules is that you can't use words that are in the title of the card, and we're going to try to get in touch with our inner artist here and try to get each other to guess what card we're looking at. So today's category is Wayland Agendas, in honor of this Jemison deck that we talked about. All right, Jake, I got one for you.
Okay.
So it's all kind of blue, and there's it looks like they're trying to construct some archway. Maybe it goes over a road or something. And on the right, there's looks like a statue of some kind. It's kind of small, but the main focus of the frame is on this giant archway or building that's under construction.
Okay, bridge. I thought is it maybe, Oaktown renovation?
No.
Okay, that would explain why the bridge didn't make sense.
It might not be a bridge. It's just it looks like that there's something underneath what. Maybe is an archway.
Yeah. I've got no idea.
Nothing? Okay. Hollywood renovation is what I was trying to get at.
Oh, okay.
And to me, it looks kind of like an arch. I don't know what you think, but...
Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
So that was kind of garbage. All right, what you got?
Okay. It looks like it may be some sort of shopping store.
Okay.
Of sorts. There is a good in the middle of it. That a child is staring at very nervously.
This is illicit sales?
That's it.
Ah, Terminal Directive! Nailed it.
Wow, very impressive.
Yeah, I'm super good at this. No, your description was awesome. Alright, I got one. This is a digital Great Wall of China. And it's kind of turquoise green, and
is it Armored Servers?
Not Armored Servers.
Digital Great Wall of China.
Yeah. So it looks like, from the perspective of the art, that you are standing on part of the
Great Wall of China.
The Great Wall
the
of
digital
China.
Great Wall
the
of
digital
China.
Great Wall of China. And it looks like. You know, it kind of winds away from you, and there's kind of like a tower or a...
I gotta play more Wayland decks, I guess.
Dude, man.
I don't know.
It's because I'm trying to get you to guess garbage cards that no one knows. Superior Cyber Walls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure enough.
There
right?
you go.
All right. I'll also pick one.
But technically, that architecture is not Chinese. That's what threw me off.
Oh, gosh, man. It's Mongolian.
Okay, I don't think you're going to get this. If you get this, I'll be very impressed. It looks like there's a futuristic screen.
Okay.
And it's broken. And it looks like there may have been a crime of some sort committed.
Okay.
It looks like the screen is broken because of a crime. Could be like a bullet.
Okay.
And you can still see the perpetrator.
Oh, is this Vulcan cover-up?
Wow, yeah.
Oh, man.
You got it.
I used to try to do an Argus deck that used the cleaners and Vulcan cover-up to do like 3 or 4 damage.
I almost picked the cleaners, too. I was deciding between those two.
That's because it's really good.
I wonder how many Wailing cards, if you were describing the art, would start with, okay, so there's a gun.
Right. Or everything's on fire.
All right, so there's a gun. And the art is closed in on the gun. And there's a person holding it. Are you looking at it?
Well, I just saw it. I just scrolled past it when I was looking for your next one. Crisis management?
Crisis management. Yeah, okay. Cheater.
Well, maybe we should be doing different categories.
Yeah, right?
I'll do the entire card pool for you, since you seem to be so good at this.
Okay. Oh, no. You're breaking away.
Okay. There's a truck, and then a big building in the background.
Okay.
That's about as much as I can give you. There's really not much going on. And they're like in a parking lot in front of the building.
We're still on Wayland Agenda,
yes,
right?
Yes.
This is Helium-3 Deposit.
Unbelievable. What?
How did I think of that?
I think you studied all of these beforehand. You're like, oh, we'll just do Wayland Agendas. Just a randomly picked category. I spent 7 hours memorizing.
Just because I wanted to beat you at my own game.
Right. You could probably describe me the agendas in my Wayland deck, and I still wouldn't guess them.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I got another one.
Okay.
There's fire.
Okay.
There's fire, and there's some people in the foreground who look like they're maybe trying to help out with the fire. And it appears to be night. Part of it is that I'm picking ones that are like not distinct at all. There's someone fighting the fire in the center of the frame. And it's a card that you should know after today, because it came up in our games.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about now. I don't remember the name of it, but it's the one you made me trash half my kit deck with by advancing it 8 times.
I did advance it 8 times.
I know. It's the 1.3 advancement.
Underway renovation.
Underway renovation.
Yeah.
I should just say random word followed by renovation and see if I get it right.
Wayland Agendas, there's a bunch of renovations. All right, you want to do one more?
Yeah, but I want to find one that's not super obvious.
Right.
I was going to do like the meteor one and then be, just, be like, there's a meteor.
Oh, meteor mining?
Okay, let's switch it up for this last one, okay?
All right.
I'm going to give you just a random card out of the entire pool.
What?
The entire pool. Watch, I'll pick something that like you have in all of your decks.
It'll be some janky card too. And it'll be like, why is this in all of your decks?
Maybe I'll pick some ice. That'll be impossible for you to describe.
I don't really like the generic ones that are like, okay, there's some people sitting around a table. Frick. IPO. Nope. Project Atlas. Nope. The board.
Right.
Nope.
Well, you did get the one. I said there's a truck in a building. You're like, Helium-3 deposits.
If it was the runner side, I would have said Zuna Soul Shipping. What?
Okay, here we go. Let's see if you can get this.
All right.
Okay, there's a building in the background.
Okay.
And there are people in front of the building, and there are people passing by that seem unrelated to the people in front of the building.
Okay.
And there's a guy in, like, a bulletproof vest.
Ooh. Okay.
The people that are in front of the building, not the passerbys, all have red jackets on.
They all have red jackets.
Except for the guy in the vest and the two people walking by. They are carrying boxes.
Carrying boxes? What?
The guy with the bulletproof vest appears to be a security guard that may be escorting the people out of the building?
It's not... Is this corporate shuffle?
That is corporate shuffle.
At first I was like, private security force. And then I was like, no, PriSec. And then I thought, hasty relocation. It was like, what?
Yeah, well, I almost described it. I was like, oh, it looks like some people were just laid off and are being...
Oh, right.
And I'm like, well, that's right. Like the definition of a corporate shuffle.
That was fun.
Yeah, I'm just so good at describing stuff. You're able to get all of
you're
them.
You're really good. Your descriptions are top notch.
Right. Yep.
I'll have to have you on again just for your descriptions.
Right, and I'll spend the previous night memorizing.
I did not all memorize of the cards. This. I did not memorize it.
I'm not a cheater.
Okay, Jake. Well, that's about all I got.
It's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. You can find us at least twice a month at shipmentfromshiloh.podomatic.com. You can always shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. My username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Thanks to Foundation for the amazing theme music, and thank you to you, our loyal listener, for listening in. That's our show. This is Graham Carlson signing off for the night. Stay safe, New Angeles, and join us next time on Shipment from Shiloh. I should do all the music as like Sousa marches and
oh,
other,
yeah.
like American pride
right, exactly,
songs.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to be American.
That's terrible.
You're gonna get tons of hate mail. I mean, like this all is the worst mail. Thing I've ever seen.
Pile of garbage.